The continent must reform. That's the message from America's top diplomat to Africa leaders. Antony Blinken has been visiting the region ahead of a summit in Washington. But has the U.S. policy towards Africa worked? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the program. I'm Hashim Ahalbarra. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken has been visiting several African countries. It's part of a Biden administration's push to increase cooperation and strengthen relations. Blinken has sought to assure leaders, unlike past U.S. administrations, this one will treat Africa as an equal partner. But it's not clear how much influence Washington hopes to have there. American pressure on Sudan and Ethiopia's leaders to end political turmoil and conflict has produced few results, and the U.S. has promised economic investment and help in the fight against COVID-19 pandemic and climate change. But can it compete with China, which wields huge influence across Africa?
The United States wants to strengthen our partnerships across Africa in ways that serve your interests, our interests, and the interests of people worldwide, whose lives and futures depend in part on what we can achieve together. The United States knows that on most of the urgent challenges and opportunities we face, Africa will make the difference. We can't achieve our goals around the world, whether that's ending the COVID-19 pandemic, building a strong and inclusive global economy, combating the climate crisis, or revitalizing democracy and defending human rights without the leadership of African governments, institutions, and citizens.
Let's bring in our guests in Nairobi, Macharia Muneni, a research associate fellow at the Horn International Institute for Strategic Studies. In Washington, D.C., William Lawrence, professor at the School of International Service at the American University. In Abuja, Ali Muhammad Ali, editor-in-chief of Nigeria's People's Daily Newspaper. Welcome to the program. Macharia, is there any sense in Africa that this U.S. administration is determined, or at least genuine, about the need to build bridges with the African continent?
Well, they are trying to, but it has not sunk in. Whether they are serious about dealing with Africa in a more respectful way, it is yet to be seen. Mm-hmm. The fact that Secretary Blinken took almost a year before even thinking of coming to Africa, this trip was long overdue, and it implied the low level in which African issues are placed in Washington. They're not a priority. So, but it was good he came, and it shows an indication that at least maybe it might be the Biden administration may be different from Trump in the way it regarded.
William, is the U.S. this time willing to reboot its Africa policy?
I wouldn't call it a reboot. I would call it a recalibration. Mm-hmm. Some of the grand themes and grand lines of the Obama and Trump administration approach are continuing through. The emphasis, for example, on trade and investments, more on old-fashioned aid and a number of other, let's say, reorganizations of that policy. But the main problem in the Trump administration was this combination of contempt and indifference, not only in the rhetoric, but in a number of the approaches. And so the reset had to be, I think, more in terms of rhetoric and tone. And there are increases going on. There's the new deal with Nigeria. There's a lot of pandemic-related things. And that's all in forward motion here. One of the themes of this trip, of course, is democracy, which was not a theme of the Trump administration. So I'd say there's a number of add-ons and then a number of adjustments to the existing policy.
Ali, there's the deal with Nigeria, but at the same time, Antony Blinken spoke in Abuja about the need for democratic reforms in the African continent, and that's particularly about the western part of the African continent, where we have been having many, many issues. How was that being seen by the Nigerians?
Well, as you can see from the reaction, especially of government, top government official, they were excited by the visit. But you see, my take here is that the idea of perhaps democratic reform, how democracy can thrive in, on the continent, and democratic reform in Africa, generally is that these things can grow in isolation. I mean, it can be done without taking into consideration the material condition of most African nation states. It's not enough to merely mount democratic reform. It should be seen in concrete terms, in material terms. What's happening in most African nation states is the, like you know, the derelict social and economic condition of African nation states. And where you'd notice of late there's been this democratic reversals in some West African states, where because democracy has failed to deliver the expected relief, if you, I mean, dividend, anticipated dividend that is better than military rule, is better than dictatorship. Democracy has not really delivered.
Okay.
It has not guaranteed some of yes. So it's important that beyond mounting democratic reforms, beyond mounting also rule of law, is a country like America should actually be more involved in changing the material condition of most African nation states.
Since you've been mentioning the idea of concrete involvement, Macharia, is it fair to say at this particular stage that Ethiopia, which is in the midst of a civil war, thousands of people were killed, almost 1 million people are on the verge of famine, is likely to top the agenda of the U.S. administration in the upcoming months?
I think it's already taken a large chunk of American thinking. And I think part of the reason Blinken came was to discuss what's going on in Ethiopia, which is a big disappointment to the Horn of Africa region and to the African continent, and I guess to the world, that an administration that started very well, the Abiy administration started very well and with the high accolades, then turned out to be so disastrous at present. And the issue is that this disaster could have been avoided. That's the thing. And I think the U.S. government is of that opinion that it could have been avoided and therefore try to see what it is that can be done to lessen the chaos, the killings, the dyings. And one of the suggestions that comes to mind is the United States and the big powers through the United Nations may help to bring all the parties together for a discussion about the future of federalism in Ethiopia, because that is the bottom line. The issue in Ethiopia is the future of federalism. Mm-hmm. And they are fighting over that, who has control than the other. So if Blinken and the Biden administration can help convince the various combatants that they do need to discuss this matter, it would then be useful. But issuing threats here and there.
That is yet to be seen. William, Ethiopia is a case where many are waiting to see whether the Americans will be able to leverage their political influence in the region and bring about a political solution to the crisis in Ethiopia. That is not happening anytime soon. Do you think that the Americans will have to bring the case of genocide declaration to put more pressure on all the parties, particularly on the Prime Minister?
I don't think necessarily genocide designations in and of themselves are good instruments. It usually raises more questions than it answers a question. But it is the case that there are war crimes and human rights atrocities happening, which are very grave and need to be addressed. And one of the frustrations of the United States, going back to Linda Thompson Greenfield's comment at the UN, the United Nations in July, is, do African lives matter? You know, when will the UN take up these issues more seriously? The UN's been on the ground in a humanitarian way in Ethiopia and in terms of human rights reporting, but there hasn't been enough concerted action. Now, if we look, for example, at the case of Libya, the U.S. was very successful in 2020-2021 to get the U.N. to pass a series of Security Council resolutions that led to the current peacemaking that's going on there in the upcoming elections. And the U.S. can do more at the United Nations, along with its African partners and others, and working to convince often the Russians and the Chinese to join on, to use the instruments of the U.N. to make peace. But ultimately, it's going to be in terms of the U.S. involvement, the actions of the envoy Feltman, you know, Blinken's trip is to three democracies, all about democracy and growth and the pandemic and climate change. But it will be Feltman, who's on the ground now in Ethiopia, to help broker the deal, as the U.S. helped broker the deal in Sudan in 2019 and needs to help broker another deal in Sudan as well.
Ali, one of the reasons why Antony Blinken spoke about democracy recession in parts of Africa, and particularly I think he was alluding to the western part of Africa, is that you have coups in places like Chad, Mali, Guinea, Burkina Faso, at a moment when the international community was hoping that the West Africa will build on a momentum that started decades ago about the need to implement strong, robust democratic institutions. Could that work anytime in the near future?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, some of the democratic reversal we witnessed in some West African nation states is partly due to the failure of democratic rule to deliver the dividends of democracy. And in some quarters, the thinking is that some of these newly democratic nation states in West Africa are not totally free of the vestiges of their former colonial masters. And because of also, if you look at, especially in French, Francophone West African countries, the military institutions there, they see themselves as part of the stakeholders, not merely involved in regime or territorial protection. So the failure also on the part of those who have superintended over the affairs under democratic rule, constantly shifting forward the goalpost, making several constitutional amends, also made them to lose their appeal to ordinary citizens, thereby opening doors for military intrusion. So I see that unless African leaders democratically elected respect constitutional provisions, I see, unfortunately, regrettably, that happening over and over again.
And as the US tries to rebuild its global reputation, it faces fierce competition from the Chinese. Let's take a look at the Chinese Belt and Road Initiative that's caused so much concern in Washington. For years, Beijing has poured huge amounts of money into development projects in developing nations throughout Asia, Africa, and Latin America. A report by Aid Data found in the first 17 years of this century, China committed more than $800 billion to more than 13,000 projects in 165 countries. But the finance came with an average 4.2% interest rate, far higher than other international options. In return, China gets access to raw materials it needs to fuel its growth. 42 nations now owe China more than a tenth of their annual output. Mashaya, some Africans find it condescending when the Americans talk about the need for democratic reforms, while at the same time, you have the Chinese stepping in, committing financial support, and, well, the perception among many Africans is that the Chinese, by their investments, are creating jobs in the African continent.
It's true. The Chinese are very smart about it. They studied the situation and they were able to reach understandings with various countries, what it is that a particular country needs and wants, and what the Chinese can provide and get. On the other side, you had the United States, and particularly and the Western powers. They seem to get things wrong. And it is okay to talk about democracy, but they are themselves not exemplaries of democratic practice. And the United States has a lot of problems in terms of imaging when it talks about democracy. And we know that some officials in the U.S. have made it very clear that when they talk about elections, they want particular individuals to win, but not the practice of democracy. So, and people see this. They say, no. What the Chinese did was to get into understandings and offer what appears like favorable terms of engagement. So you want a road and they want something, you cut a deal, they give you a road and you give them whatever it is. When the Western powers get into discussions with African countries, they usually do not deliver on what they promise. Instead, they put in a lot of strange conditions that make sure that they deliver. And the price is usually more expensive than it should be. You not why that the case is. So there is an image problem about the Western powers.
Okay. William, so how can the U.S. move forward when it comes to the African continent when the general perception is that the Americans talk the talk, but they never walk the walk?
Well, this is more of a perception than reality. Just look at, for example, the vaccines. The U.S. has delivered 50 million doses, and there's been assistance from the Chinese, but not on that scale, and yet the Chinese get the credit. In terms of these the economic development projects, they announce a lot more than they do, and there's a lot of corruption associated with these, and in some cases, in maybe seven African countries, very predatory loans and other economic disadvantages. I agree with your panelist that you can't have democracy without human development. But I would also posit you can't have human development without democracy and a democratization of the economy. So the point here is to get both right. And what Blinken said in his speeches was very clear. The U.S. isn't going to do anything with Africa because China's doing anything with Africa. It's going to do it because it wants partnerships with Africa that move things in the right direction. And one of those things is empowering the people, both politically and socioeconomically. And that's done by more transparent transactions, more better governance. And, you know, I follow China, Africa quite closely, and the amount of corruption and predatory loaning is quite astounding. So Blinken said, let's give the Africans choices, not just conditions, but choices.
Ali, when it comes to providing support for the African continent, one of the issues is COVID-19 pandemic, where the Americans are now asked to provide more assistance to the WHO and to the COVAX to ensure that the vaccine is distributed and that Africans get access to the vaccine. But again, here, the Chinese, the Russians and the Indians are widely seen in Africa as more active than the Americans.
Yeah, you see, the thing is, like I said earlier, America needs to be more involved in Africa's economic and even growth. Beyond what you said, the post-COVID-19 era, the intervention by America is not seen in many quarters, especially in this part of the continent, as enough. Why? Because, they say you give a man the fish, you've given food for a day, but teach him how to fish. Now, America and indeed the West needs to perhaps intervene more by making opening America's market, for example, to African products, give it more access to, greater bilateral relations, not one-sided as we have now, especially in Nigeria. And Nigeria imports a lot of things from America, but then if you look at it, just one way kind of thing. So, yes, hello?
Go ahead, Ali. Go ahead.
Yes, America might have intervened in post-COVID-19 era, by providing vaccine and so on and so forth, but it's not enough, especially given the tremendous goodwill America enjoys in Nigeria. America's soft power is so pervasive, it's so wide-ranging, but that has not translated into concrete material terms.
Okay.
Like I said, yes.
I see your point. Masharia.
It has not translated.
I see your point. So you're talking about the need for that potential to be translated into practical achievements on the ground. Masharia, when you have the Trump administration issuing all those statements about the African continent, widely seen as abandoning the continent, now it takes a new administration to say we're about to reset everything. Do you think that when you have those gaps, it will be easy for the US to bring about peace and stability to a place like the Horn of Africa, where you have Sudan, Ethiopia and Somalia on the verge of more and more violent episodes of events?
Yes, I think it is good that the Biden administration is trying to reset everything in a positive way. But the first thing it has to do is to regain credibility, which it lost, particularly during the Trump administration. Regaining credibility is not easy because people have memories of what it is that the United States has said or done, and sometimes not very good things. And now to convince somebody that you have changed dramatically, it would take a little time. Mm-hmm. Yes, it can be done. And show a little more respect for Africans than the U.S. Is known to do. And I know that President Biden has spoken very much, saying that he wants to have respect everywhere. Now, that respect needs to be translated into action on the ground. So when officials go around appearing to give orders to African countries, then something goes wrong, because there's an assumption of superior-inferior, a master-servant, and therefore order them, you must do this, you must do that, you must. Then people say, and who are you? After all the things you are telling us to do, you don't do yourself. So why? The respect and credibility needs to be restored.
And I think this explains why Biden, in his first address to the African Union, was talking about diplomacy and dignity. William, the US has been fixated for decades on places like the Middle East and Afghanistan. Now there is a moment for the US to think about the African continent. So it's AFRICOM is basically now working hard to try to contain the rise of armed groups, not only in the sub-Saharan Africa, the Sahel, the regional, the Niger Basin, but in different parts of the African continent. Could this become the new battleground against radical groups?
Yes, it's not becoming the new battleground against radical groups because the U.S. wants it to be so, but because they're doing so well, particularly in the Sahel and the Horn of Africa. So this is going to be a major priority of the U.S. Going forward. Let me also say that even though the Chinese are investing a lot, they're not involved geostrategically in the African continent, and they're actually wanting the U.S. to play a greater role there because they face the same problems with terrorism and insecurity in Africa that the Americans do. The Chinese have also been reducing their imports from Africa because of that and getting their hydrocarbons more from Iran and Central Asia than from Africa because of those issues. China's actually frustrated, but their program is geoeconomic, not geostrategic. So the U.S. Not only should do a lot more, as your other guest said, economically, but they need to do a lot more in terms of cooperative partnerships with Africa on the security side, mm-hmm. and that includes an economic piece. I was one of the creators of the Trans-Sahel Partnership, and we laid out a map that was very economic and very security-oriented, and the security pieces were largely done, and the economic pieces were not. So a comprehensive strategy, a holistic strategy that deals with the economic roots of conflicts, another thing is the way to go about this. And that type of comprehensive strategic vision, it won't be coming from China. It needs to come better from the African countries themselves in partnership with the United States.
William Lawrence Macharia Mneni Ali Muhammad Ali, I really appreciate your insight. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AGA Inside Story. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AGA Inside Story. From me, Hashim Al-Barra, and the entire team, bye for now.